Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate, along with my co-host for our monthly ethics series, Dr. Gregory Eastwood, and our special guest this morning, Dr. Tom Curran. We're talking about medical technology and keeping babies alive. And as we took the break, we introduced the idea of multiples and even octomom. Dr. Greg Eastwood, where do we go from here?
Okay, so medical technology is a wonderful thing, but it creates a lot of issues, doesn't it? And we've talked about those things. And it creates ethical questions. And remember, when we talked about ethics before, we talked about this idea of doing good or beneficence. So are we doing good for the parents? Are we doing good for the babies? Are we doing good for society? Another take on that is, what are the rights of the parents? Are the rights of the parents to have babies in the first place? Through IVF, in vitro fertilization, things like that. What are the rights of these poor little babies who are born so early? Those rights seem to have been neglected. I know that Dr. Curran has thoughts about that. And also, what are the rights of society? Because society ultimately bears a lot of the burden and the responsibility after everything is done in Dr. Curran's neonatology unit. So, Tom, would you give us your thoughts about this, particularly perhaps focusing on your interest in advocacy for who's going to advocate for the babies?
Sure. Well, you brought up the octomom, and obviously that caught national attention because here was a woman who had eight children at a single delivery. But as a neonatologist, I'm well aware of the fact that just having twins is fraught with its own set of risks. You don't need to have, the human uterus is meant to hold one baby at a time. That's how it was designed. And anytime there's more than one fetus inside of a uterus, it comes with a host of both acute and long-term risks.
And that's no matter whether those babies are naturally in that uterus or were put there by fertilization.
That is absolutely correct. No matter how more than one fetus ended up there, they all have the same risk profile. And that is to say, when you're first born, you certainly are more likely to die if you are a preterm infant than if you are a full-term infant. You're more likely to have a host of medical problems in that immediate preterm period, bleeding into your brain, your intestines not working properly, passageways in your hearts that need to be closed, all sorts of acute medical problems. But once you get out of the nursery and begin to your life in your home, even normal, what are considered to be normal low birth weight babies have an increased incidence of behavioral problems, asthma, IQs less than 85, school learning problems. It can be a lifelong burden, they are more likely to have these problems than their full term counterparts. So being born prematurely has its own host of lifetime risks.
And being born prematurely is increased by the idea of having multiples. Is that right? Do I understand that correctly?
The incidence of a multiple gestation, if you're getting pregnant the old-fashioned way, and I think we are all familiar with that, is approximately 2%. In the assisted fertility industry in the United States right now, the incidence of multiple gestation is greater than 30%. So it's a 15-fold increase in prematurity associated with multiple gestations.
So, Tom, you said in the United States. I picked up on that. Is it different in other countries?
It is absolutely different in other countries. I think the best country to compare it to would be Sweden. In Sweden, they as a country have made the decision to only reimplant one embryo at a time with their assisted fertility process. And their incidence of preterm birth is fundamentally lower than in the United States. And the reason for that is, if you only put one embryo back, the large majority of your assisted fertility pregnancies are going to end with a single baby.
All right.
Although theoretically you could have twins just like the old-fashioned way, right?
Old-fashioned way. If they split. You can't control. It's one part fairy dust. We always say that.
One part fairy dust. That's a good way of looking at it. But here's the question is, how is it that in Sweden they can tell people what to do? What's the difference? We can't do that here in this country, can we?
No, obviously, in Sweden, everyone has access to health care. It's government-run. And in the States, we have a essentially private industry run insurance program, and that changes the rules for how that plays out.
So if I'm understanding correctly, the fact that in this country we have privatized health insurance, which means therefore you can buy these kinds of services, that difference in the money means that you have a 30% prematurity rate versus, what was the lower rate? You said 6% or something like that earlier. That's just an astounding difference.
Without question. And I think it speaks to, it's in America, we have a very high premium on individual liberty and people being able to determine what they, what they'd like to do. And that plays out in particular with the assisted fertility industry insofar as it is entirely unregulated in the States.
And where a lot of people are making a lot of money. But Dr. Eastwood, that takes us to the first question about rights of parents, doesn't it?
Rights of parents and also the rights of the babies. I mean, would it be in the baby's best interest or the parents' best interest not to be so vigorous in treating or even allowing the baby to die? I mean, you deal with situations like this all the time.
Well, I always frame it in this way. Essential treatments have to be given.
Essential meaning?
High benefit, low risk therapies.
Okay.
So, for example, let's go back to Patrick Bouvier Kennedy. If he was born at 34 weeks and 4 pounds today in my hospital and had respiratory distress, I would intubate, I would put a tube into his airway and give him medicine to help his lungs work better. Even if his family said, we don't want him intubated, we don't want him treated. That is, so as an individual, he would get a therapy that is high benefit, low risk, okay?
And he would survive.
And he would survive at 34 weeks. If Patrick Bouvier Kennedy was born today in our nursery at 23 weeks, what the parents felt about the vigorous nature with which we should resuscitate him would very much come into play. If they were of the mind that this baby at 23 weeks has less than a 10% chance of surviving without having significant associated complications, and we prefer to take a more comfort care approach, their opinion in that situation would hold a great deal of stead with us.
All right, and comfort care referring to?
Comfort care would be not providing would be providing time for the baby basically to be with the family in a loving and pain-free environment, but that would ultimately lead to the baby's demise.
It would. All right. So we talk about the rights of babies to survive. Of course, if they weren't born to begin with, they wouldn't survive, and that's part of the question here too. But what are the rights of parents to make these choices about whether or not they're going to have these in vitro fertilization babies? I know there's a question about how many eggs get implanted.
And I would add, what are the rights of parents versus the rights of society? Because they may not align. They may conflict, in fact.
Absolutely true.
So first off, with regards to, I refer to it as the moment of truth in the assisted fertility industry, is when the family and the physician decide how many embryos are going to go back into the uterus for the attempted pregnancy. That is entirely, there are suggestions for how to do it, but there are no regulations for how to do it. So
In
the States.
Okay.
And that's the way it exists right now. With regards to society as a whole, you have to realize that although insurance does not, our private insurance does not fully fund the cost of assisted fertility, and in many instances only funds a small portion of the cost associated with the family to pursue assisted fertility. Once the babies are born, those babies are all back into the regular insurance pool and are paid for out of all of our premiums that we pay into our own insurance. And so we refer to it as a backloaded pay system for society, because the society pays for the children who are born prematurely. And as these hospital stays, when you're born at 27, 28, 29 weeks, you stay in the hospital for 5, 6, or 7 weeks, you're talking about millions of dollars in just acute care hospital bills.
So that means that for my insurer, if someone else who is insured by that insurer decides to choose to have 2 or 3 babies and those babies run into problems and are born that prematurely, then part of my premium is paying to keep those babies in the hospital to the tune of $1 million?
That's precisely correct.
All right. And not only that, if the family somehow has multiples, whether or not it has anything to do with in vitro fertilization, and somehow they don't have insurance or they lose their insurance, perhaps somebody gets laid off after those babies are born, then they are now thrown into the pool where the government might have to pick up the tab. Is that correct?
That's exactly correct.
All right. So, in effect, for a parent to decide to have multiples, or for preemies to be born because they didn't get good enough care, I, as the taxpayer, am going to subsidize that.
Without question.
All right. So, Dr. Eastwood, that takes us to another ethical question, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. Because we very often tend to focus on what I would call the primary players, mm-hmm. the baby, the parents, the doctors, the nurses, and so on, in this highly intense drama that's playing out on the in Crouse Hospital in the Neonatology. But we are all interested in this. We all have an interest in this.
And we all have a stake in it.
We all have a stake in it.
Because that's not right. only are those babies going to have to be taken care of by the government for health care, now I have to educate them because they go into the school system. They become adults and their parents can no longer care for them. Maybe the parent has died. And somehow society has to take care of them as well. It's a huge question. And it's because technology takes care of babies. Well, listeners, this has been an interesting discussion. I'm sure you would agree. Dr. Eastwood, thank you so much for your help this morning.
Pleasure.
And Dr. Curran, certainly for joining us this morning.
My pleasure.
We'll look forward to our discussion next month. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Listeners, we'll be back in just a few moments. This is Upstate Medical University's HealthLink On Air on 570 WSYR.